And we're holding on page Yud Gimel in Yerushalmi Sota, a Sukkah rather, Yerushalmi Sukkah, Os Dalad. We started learning yesterday various things about how Hashem is with us in Golos and how when Hashem takes us out of Golos, then he comes along with us, which we mentioned in the Hashinus as well. So now another Maim Chazal in that connection. The Gemara continues. Rabbi Rechia, Rabbi Yumia, B'shem Rabbi Chia Babod. So this chain of Chachamim said that Dorash Levi Bar Sisi, Ben Ahada, Levi Bar Sisi, this is the famous Uli Amorda Levi, once Darshan in the city of Nahada, as follows. We find by Matan Torah, you have the most of the events of Matan Torah are described in Parshas Yisro, but then you also have, at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, where it mentions some supplementary information. So you have this expression over there in the Pasuk that Moshe, Aaron, and the Nadav and Avihu and the Shivim Skenim went up to Har Sinai, each one to their appropriate part, and the Pasuk says, Vayiru Aselekei Yisrael, they saw Hashem, the Sachas Raglov, and under his feet, Kemaisa Livnas HaSapir, was like the work of a brick made out of sapphire, and like the purity and clearness of the sky. So in other words, at least on the straightforward level, it means they're seeing over there under, so to speak, under Hashem's feet, by the foot of the Kisei HaKavod, they're seeing a brick over there, but made out of sapphire. So why a brick? So, Zuad Shalanigalu. So this was how it was before the Jewish people were taken out of Mitzrayim, that then there was the brick over there representing, again, because the Jewish people are enslaved in Mitzrayim and they're being forced to make bricks, so therefore the Eibishlish is with them, so to speak, in Golos as well, and therefore he had a brick over there. Aval Mishan Nigalu, but after they were redeemed from Mitzrayim, Einan Darka Shalavena, Lihinosin Shamahina Sunnah, it's not normal, it's not the proper thing for a brick to be there by Hashem's throne, so it was placed there. So what does that mean exactly? So HaKosev has a bit of a discussion, and the different Mephoshim and Yerushalmi also discuss exactly what the Yerushalmi means. Does it mean, after all, when Moshe and Aaron and the rest of them are seeing this, is by Matan Torah, is a couple of months after Yetzias Mitzrayim, and they're seeing the brick over there. So does it mean that they saw that the brick had been there during the time when the Jewish people were in Mitzrayim, and now that the Jewish people are out of Mitzrayim, then instead of the brick, they see Ucha'etzim HaShemayim L'Torahar, they see the purity and clearness of the sky? And Rashi says as much on the pasuk that's what it means, that beforehand there had been that now they saw that there was Kemaisa living as a sapper, there had been at the time of the Shibud, there was a brick over there, and now Mishanigal, the Rashi says, oh, you're over Chedvelafanov, there's light and there's joy in front of Hashem, and no more brick over there. Or do we mean that, HaKosev discusses, maybe what it means is that beforehand the brick was on earth, and Hashem, so to speak, was on earth, his Shinah was on earth together with them and suffering with them. And now Hashem put it in the, now after Yetzias Mitzrayim, then Hashem put it over there to show that now they're not being enslaved on earth anymore, but Hashem still has, so to speak, a remembrance of it. And also HaKosev discusses the idea would be maybe that the brick is there in Shemayim to represent that from now on it's never going to come down to earth again. The Jewish people are never going to be enslaved in that way again. That you're going to have different golosin after that, but not of the same kind of as the Shibud in Mitzrayim. In fact, that's somewhat similar to a point that the Maharal makes of why do we make such a big deal of Yetzias Mitzrayim. He says, after all, I mean, we've had many other golosin since then. And the answer is that made a permanent change that from then on, essentially, a Yid is free. We may be, at various times, we're enslaved and persecuted and whatnot by the various Goyish nations, but the intrinsic nature of a Yid ever since Yetzias Mitzrayim is a Ben Chorin, which has applications in Halacha as well. So therefore, in token of that, the idea would be that Hashem put the brick up there in Shemayim when the Jewish people were first taken out of Mitzrayim to show from now on it's not on earth, from now on it's going to stay with me and it's never going to come back onto earth again. And he just says, the whole thing, he says, it's a little bit doicha to explain the wording in the Yerushalmi over here, because after all, the expression is shom hi nesuna. It shouldn't be placed there, but shom hi nesuna. There it's placed, so maybe it means that eventually at some point Hashem took it away, and there's no roshem, there's no remnant at all that there had ever been a brick there, and all you have is ucha etzma shamayim lotoya. So the Gemara continues, Amar Berechia, Maisa in Ksiv Kan. Now, it doesn't even say in the Pasuk that there is the actual work of a brick. It doesn't say that they saw Maisa Livnas HaSapir, Ela Kim Maisa. It says they saw like the work of a brick. So that means, means they didn't just see the brick. When they saw what they saw, that there was a brick over there, they actually saw all the Argalia, or Argalia, however you pronounce it, of it. Which means all of the, the Aruch explained the word Argalia is related to the word Margilim, like everything that makes it possible and makes it a custom to have a brick over there. So it would include, for example, the basket that they use to carry the clay and the spade or the shovel or whatever it is that they use to dig up the clay, etc. So Hashem has all of that in front of him, not just a finished brick, but actually all of the tools that are used to make the brick. And he prakmati shalah. Namely, all the other business, all the other things that go together with a brick. So the same way, in other words, Hashem doesn't just put a brick over there. He has over there everything, all of the tools that are necessary to make it, and everything that's involved in the whole brick making process. Again, representing, in other words, that Hashem is with the Jewish people during all that time and going through the same kind of thing. They're going through all this hardship, having to use all these tools to make bricks for the Mitzrayim, and therefore Hashem is participating in that as well, and so to speak, has the tools there in front of him. So the Gemara point continues. Now let's consider when the Novi Yechezkel sees the Meister Merkava almost 1,000 years later, and he's in Bovel, as he begins his Sefer. So then Ksiv, so he describes above the Chayas HaKodesh, between them and the Kisei HaKavod, you have Kamare Evan Sapphire. He says he saw like a stonework of sapphire above the heads of the Kerubim. Over Mitzrayim, Ksiv, Kamaisa Livnas HaSapir. Meanwhile, after Yitzias Mitzrayim was saying by Matan Torah that Moshe and Aaron and the rest of them perceived that they saw a brickwork of sapphire. So why after Yitzias Mitzrayim was it bricks? And why now in Golos Babel is it instead stones? Lalam the Chart comes to teach you, Shekashem Shah Evan Kashman Alvena. Just as stones are harder and are harder than bricks, so also the subjugation of the Jewish people in Babel was in a way worse than that in Mitzrayim. For a couple of reasons. For one thing, because in Mitzrayim they hadn't yet been a nation, so therefore it wasn't so intense. Now when they'd already been a nation and they'd already been independent and a kingdom and everything for hundreds of years, and now they're being degraded in Babel, then it was much worse. The Beis HaMikdash should be destroyed, etc., etc. So in token of that, therefore, Hashem showed Yechezkel a pavement of stone, so to speak, rather than a pavement of bricks. And the Gemara continues, Tony Bakapara, Adshala Nigal and Yisrael Mitzrayim, before the Jewish people were redeemed from Mitzrayim, posted the Shuma Barakia. Then this brick was marked in Shemayim. So maybe wasn't, again, Akosef says, maybe it doesn't mean the actual brick wasn't there. It means that there was at least a roshim. There's at least a marking that there is a semblance of a brick over there. Misha Nigalu, once they were redeemed, oid le nearest Berakia, then the brick is no longer even visible in the heavens. So when it says, Vayiru Aselike Yisrael, Vesachas Raglav, Kamaisa Livnas Asapir, so again, it would mean that they saw that before the Geula, from before Yitzias Mitzrayim, there had been a semblance of a brick over there, and now there's not even that. My time, why? Because as the Pasuk says, Etzem HaShemayim L'Torhar, like the very heavens as far as purity, meaning that now, after Yitzias Mitzrayim, they saw Kitkoif Shmaya, like the powerful like the powerful color, the intrinsic color of the heavens, kad inu nakim min anonin, when the heavens are clear of all clouds, and you see the, and you see the sky in its full purity and its full brilliance. Now, after Yitzchak Mitzrayim, that's how they saw, that's how they saw surrounding the Kisei HaKavod. Because again, as Rashi says on the Pasuk, now after Yitzchak Mitzrayim, there's no more brick over there because you don't need any more imayon echibitzara. Instead, you have Ur v'ched v'lefonav. You have complete light and joy in front of Hashem, and in token of that, they saw as if, like you see, the pure color of the sky. Where elsewhere the Gemara tells us, b'chlal, that the blue of the sky represents the Kisei, represents, not represents, reflects the blue of the Kisei HaKavod. So now also they saw the action, now they were able to see the Kisei HaKavod without any brickwork and without any of these tools and whatnot surrounding it. So again, the point of all of this is to underscore the idea of Imayon Echibitzara, that wherever the Jewish people are in Sarah, then the Eibishter is with them, and therefore that when they were in Mitzrayim, then the Eibishter had not only the brick, but also all the tools for making bricks there together with him, and so to speak, he's participating in it as well. Yesterday we talked about that you have the as the Bavli says, Golola Bavl Shchinei Maham, Golola Edom Shchinei Maham, and so forth, and every individual Yid also goes into Golos in a particular place, and the Eibishter is with him in some, to some degree. There's a lesser degree of Shchina when you have an individual than there is, when you have a Tzibur, but, as we have in Tanya currently, but it's still, there's something over there. There's in fact a medrash that has an expression where Hashem says, if one of you goes into Golos to Barbaria, which is like parts of North Africa, and another one to Sarmatia, which is like a place in Russia or Poland or something like that, then as far as I'm concerned, it's as if all of you had gone into Golos over there, because even one individual Yid is able to bring down on the course in that place and then do Avodas Abirurim over there. All right, Masechta Rosh Hashanah, Perek Rishon. So the beginning of Masechta Rosh Hashanah talks about how Rosh Chodesh Nissen, Abba Rosh Hashanah, Heim, and Echad B'Nissen is Rosh Hashanah L'Molochim V'L'Regolim, and then Rosh Chodesh Tishrei is the Rosh Hashanah as far as years. So in that connection then, the Gemara mentions, Omer of Chia, Shmois HaChadoshim Olum Mibavel. The names that we use for the months, Nissen, Iyar, Sivan, etc., those came from Bavel. But Rishona, originally the months didn't have proper names. All they have really is nicknames based on things that happen in that month. For example, we find in Melachim that the Chanukah Sabbath of the first Beis Hamikdash took place B'Yerach HaEisonim, the month of Eisonim, which is Chodesh Tishrei. They began the Chanukah Sabbath on Ches Tishrei. It ran for 7 days, from Ches through Yudal and Tishrei, and then right after that was the 7 days of Sukkot. So why is it called B'Yerach HaEisonim? So the Gemara says, the Bavli says similarly also in the Sefer Rosh Hashanah, so Eisonim means the powerful ones. So it means Shabbat Nildu Ovis, Omesu. That was the month in which the Ovis were born and passed away, so therefore it's called a sonim after them. So again, the idea is that it's not really a proper name of the month, it's more like a nickname for the month because of this event, the Nifkadu HaImahis, and it's also the month in which the Imahis were remembered, and Hashem decided that they were going to conceive and have children. So therefore, it's called a sonim in token of those mighty, powerful Tzadikim and Tzidkonius, but that's not the actual name of the month per se. Similarly, Barishona, you also find, for example, that it describes over there also in Melachim, that the completion of the construction of this Mikdash took place in Cheshvan. What happened was they finished it in Cheshvan, and then they waited for the Chanukah Sabbath for almost a whole year until the following Tishrei. And the Pasuk calls it B'Yerach Bul. The Pasuk calls it the month of Bul. So why is Cheshvan being called Bul? Shaboy Ha'ola Noivel. First of all, because that's the time when the leaves fall. So Noivel, Bul, it's the same Shodesh. And second of all, Va'aretz Asuya Bulois Bulois. The ground is full of clods of dirt, because at that point you have the rains begin to fall. But you still haven't had the heavy rains yet. So at that point, the earth is forming clods of dirt, which still separate very easily. A bull means a clod of dirt. And also, at that point, they start mixing food to feed to their animals, to their livestock, from what's inside the house. Because at that point already, Cheshvan time, you don't really have grass growing in the fields anymore. It all got used up, or it all got harvested or eaten, or whatever's left of it. it dries up by that time, so there's none of it left in the field, so therefore you have to have a supply of grass or hay or whatever in the house, and you feed it to the animals. So therefore the month is called Bul in token of those three things. Similarly, Barishayna B'Yerach Ziv, another example, also in connection with the building of the first Beis HaMikdash, it describes the construction began in the month of Ziv, which is the month of Iyar. Why was Iyar nicknamed Ziv? Shabbat Ziv L'chala Olam, because Ziv means a radiance. The whole world is radiant then. Hatzmochim Nikarim, the plants that are growing in the ground are visible because you planted them sometime before and now they're already not just peeking out of the ground, now already it's noticeable what plant is what. Vavilonis Nikaris, and the trees also, you can tell, you can already start seeing the fruit is growing on the trees, and you can recognize one tree from another. So therefore, the month is called Ziv, because of that. Yeah. The Bavli also mentions that the Bavli mentions actually that Ziv may refer to Nisan, and the Bavli brings an opinion that the Ovis were born in Nisan, unlike what we said over here, that they were born in Tishrei. The Bavli brings both opinions, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, and it says, according to the opinion, they were born in Nisan, and the month is called Ziv, because Ziv Sonei Olam, the radiant ones of the world, the Ovis, were born in that month. Tosfos and other Mephoshim discuss, actually, how that doesn't contradict the Pasuk seemingly says that Ziv is Chodesh Iyar, as the Rashami is saying over here. One answer is that we have to distinguish between one explanation is it means the Ovis were born in Nisan, and therefore Iyar is the first full calendar month in which they were alive, so therefore the month of Iyar can be called Ziv, not that they were actually born in it, but like it's the first full month of their lives. Another point is also, Tosfos mentions over there, is that after all, there's the months according to the moon, as we count from Rosh Chodesh to Rosh Chodesh, and then you have the months according to the Tekufa, where you have Tekufas Nisan, is sometime nowadays in early April, and then you have the next 30 days after that are considered to be the Tekufas Nisan, according to the solar calendar, so therefore, so you can have, and that can well run into Iyar. Many times it happens that Tekufas Nisan happens, it takes place sometime during Chodesh Nisan, and it's still going on, the first month of it is still going on, during the lunar month of Iyar. Whatever the case, the point is that the Yerushalmi is making the point over here that none of these are, that Eitz Yosef explains, that none of these are the intrinsic names of the months. Instead, throughout Tanakh, other than these three places, you always have the months are referred to by number. Nisan is always called Chodesh HaRishon, Iyar is called Chodesh HaSheni, etc. Mikan ve'elach, but after Golos Bavel, after Hashem redeemed us from that Golos, then you start finding the names that we're familiar with. For example, Nehemiah says Vayhi b'chodesh Nisan or Vayhi b'chodesh Kislev Shnas Esrin. He mentions at the beginning of the portion of Sefer Ezra that he wrote, which nowadays is called a separate Sefer of Nehemiah. So he describes at the beginning of it that in Chodesh Kislev of the 20th year of King Artaxasta, he was told about what's going on in Yerushalayim, that the walls are still destroyed. And then in Nisan of that year, he went and talked to the king and got permission to go to Yerushalayim and rebuild the walls. So we see that there he calls them just by their names, by Hebe Chodesh Kislev and by Hebe Chodesh Nisan, without even mentioning the numbers. Similarly, we have in Megillas Esther, Chodesh HaAsiri, Chodesh Tevis. Esther was brought to Achashverosh in the 10th month, which is Chodesh Tevis. We have a few other examples like that in the later Sfarim of Tanakh as well. We have a couple of examples in Chagai, Schari, and Malachi as well, where the numbers are identified by, where the months are identified by number and by name. The Ramban makes a point about it in his pirush on a Chodesh Elohim in Parshas Bo. So like this, we know a Chodesh Elohim is there's two things included in that pasuk. One is that Nisan should be the first month. The other is that we have a concept of Kiddush HaChodesh. So the Ramban explains they continued to have the months still count from Nisan after that. That didn't change. You still have the Nisan is the first month and Iyar is the second. But what Hashem wanted and then told the Nevi'im of that time is just like, why is it that Nisan is the first month? Because that's the month of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and therefore every time we mention a month by its number, then it helps us remember and thank Hashem for Yetzias Mitzrayim. Well then, says the Ramban, the that based on a pasuk in Yirmiyah, which mentions that there's a pasuk in Yirmiyah that says that there's going to come a time when we're not going to mention Yitzias Mitzrayim. Instead, we're going to mention Golos, the Geula from Golos Bavo, because that's going to kind of overshadow it. So in token of that, therefore, the Nevi'im took the names that were used in Bavo and adapted them for Jewish use as well. So therefore, so every time we use the name Nisan or Ir or any of the other month names, it reminds us that the Eibishter took us out of Bavel, where those names were in common use, and it causes us to thank Hashem for taking us out of that Golos. And Hakosev points out over here, he has an explanation at the beginning of Masechta Megillah, where he has a long discussion over there in the Megillah, in the Bavli, where he has a long discussion over there based on discussing something that the Sefer Ikrim writes, that seemingly there are times when there are things that were changed as far as the way we do certain things in Yiddishkeit. And this is one example where before we're saying they used to call the months by numbers, and now we call them by names, and it seems to be a change. And Akosev talks over there very much by Arichos, and he mentions it briefly over here. This is not a change. The fact is the numbers are still, the names still keep, the months still keep their numbers as before. We still say that Nisan is the first month, for example, not January. Mind you, there are poskim, for example, who don't like the idea. For example, you often have, you write on a form, for example, today is October or whatever, and you would write 10/24, whatever it is. There are a number of poskim that are not really comfortable with that idea based on this, that we're supposed to have the numbers of the months are supposed to be counted from Nisan, not from January or not from anything else. Anyway, the point is, though, Akosev makes the point that the numbers still keep, the months still keep their numbers. All it is the Nevi'im of that time, at the beginning of the second Mishnah Mikdash, added also that we start using the names, and again, as the Ramban says, that's in token of that Hashem took us out of Golos Bavel. Okay. The Gemara continues, Resh Lakish Omer, Af Shmois HaMalachim Olam Bavel. Here's another thing that they got from Bavel as well, is names for the Malachim. For example, Barishona, earlier we find, for example, the Novi Yeshaya describes his first Nevuah. He says, Vayof Eli Echad Min HaSerafim. He says, one of the Serafim flew towards me with a coal in his hand. And that one Saraf, Eitz Yosef points out, where the Gemara explains that was actually Malach Gavriel. But Yeshaya doesn't call him by name, he just calls him Echad Min HaSerafim. Similarly, a couple of psukim earlier, he says, Serafim Omnim Imaloi. There was Serafim standing in front of Hashem, again, without naming any of them. Mikan Va'elach, after that, we start finding, and say for Daniel, for example, Va'ish Gavriel, or Michoel Sarchem, so the concept that Malachim have individual names, not so much the concept that they have individual names, that was known before that, but that we use those names, that was something else that came out of Golos Bavel, where before that they didn't do that. The Malachim before that, the Pashtus, did have names as well that people were familiar with. There's actually a Medrash that says, it actually brings it on a Pasuk in Sefer Yirmiyah, that there were people at the time of the Churban who knew how to beswear the appropriate Malachim to do things for them. So, for example, they could call on the Malach of fire to send down a fire on Nebuchadnezzar's army, or the Malach of water to send down a flood on them, etc. So what did Hashem do? He switched around the names and the jobs of the Malachim. So now a person uses his methods to call on, let's say, the Malach of fire, then the Malach will tell him, I'm sorry, now I've been reassigned, I can't do that for you anymore. So the Pashtus, they had names before that as well. We're just saying that the names weren't revealed to the Hamoinam, whereas now we have, Daniel actually reveals them in the Pasuk, and we use them on a commonplace basis. There is, by the way, where the Arizal says we shouldn't refer to Malachim by name unless the names are used as people's names as well, like Michal and Gavriel and whatever. That's why, for example, we say Matat, or we say Samach Mem, and similarly with other, and similar in Sandal and other Malachim, rather than calling them by their full names. Okay. Further on in the Perek, it talks about, so one of the things that happens, so, in the Mishnah says there are four times a year when the world is judged, and one of them is that on Rosh Hashanah, everybody goes in front of Hashem, Kivnei Morim, on an individual, going single file in front of Hashem, and Hashem judges each person individually. We have that line in Nesana Terekif. So the Gemara discusses over here, as the Bavli also does over here, when exactly does Hashem judge people? Rav Oma Kulan Nidonin Barash Hashanah, everybody gets judged on Rosh Hashanah, Ugzardin and Mishatim Biyema Kippurim or Barash Hashanah. Everybody's judgment is sealed on Yom Kippur, or different, a different gear say in the Yerushalmi, is B'Rosh Hashanah. So in fact, the Bavli, when it talks about this, says that the tzaddikim are nichtovim and nechtomim la'alter, they're right away written and sealed on Rosh Hashanah for good, and the Rishoyim exactly the opposite, and the Beinim are in suspense until Yom Kippur, and then they're sealed on Yom Kippur. But here the Yerushalmi is saying that everybody is on Yom Kippur, or according to the other Girsa, everybody is on Rosh Hashanah. So where do we see that Hashem judges on Rosh Hashanah and goes into the details? The Tani, the Tekiyas, the Devav. We learn, in fact, in the Nusach that was said together with the Tekiyas that was composed by Rab. This is part of the bracha. This is part of the bracha of Zichronis. So the fact that we say the three brachas, the three middle brachas in Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, Malchi, Zichronis, and Shofars, that the Gemara learns from Pesukim that we need to say. But the actual Nusach, where Malchus would begin with Aleinu, and Zichronis would begin with Atta Zoicher, and Shofaris, etc., that Nusach was composed by Rav, and therefore it's called Tkiyas de Rav. So we have in there the expression, Zehayim Tchilas Masecha, this day, Rosh Hashanah, is the beginning of your works, which is actually the day that Adam and Chava were created, but so you have the famous explanation, which is all over in Mefarshim, and brought from there all over in Chassidus, that because since before that, the world didn't have a purpose yet, Adam and Chava were created in order Lassus Lo Yisparach Dideh V'Tachtonim, and therefore that's the real Tchilas Masecha. Anyways, the Koran L'Yoyim Rishen, it's a remembrance of that first day, Kichoitli Yisrael Hu, because it's a judgment it's a decision for Yisrael, Mishpat Lelekei Yaakov, a judgment for the God of Yaakov. So we see that everybody is judged on that day, and we continue in that Nusach, Balam Adinis Bo Yomer, on all the countries, it's said on that day, on Rosh Hashanah, Eza L'Cherev V'Eza L'Shalom, which one is going to suffer from the sword, and which one is going to be at peace, Eza L'Rav V'Eza L'Sava, which one is going to have famine, and which one is going to have plenty, Ubrius V'Yapokedu L'Skirim L'Chaim V'Lamavis, and every individual is mentioned then to remember them as far as life or as far as death. So we see that everybody is judged individually on Rosh Hashanah. And we see that the Nusach and Davening reflect that. Now, the Gemara points out, Udloikir of Yosef. Now, that opinion that everybody is judged on Rosh Hashanah, and then everybody is sealed either on Rosh Hashanah itself or on Yom Kippur, that's not like Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef, I'm a Yochad Nidin B'chol Shah. He says that an individual is judged every moment. Ma'taima, where does he get that from? Because the Pasuk says, Vatif G'denu Liv Karim. The Pasuk says, you mention him every morning, Lurigoyim Tivchanenu, every moment you test him. So what's Lavkorim and what's Lurigoyim? But Tifgudenu Lavkorim Zupanasase, the first half of the Pasuk refers that Hashem mentions a person every morning, that refers to the Parnasa that he's going to have that day. Lurigoyim Tivchanenu, and when it says every moment you test him, Zuachibase, that's as far as his eating, because a person can have Parnasa, but he may not be able to actually enjoy it. For example, he could choke on it, for example, or something. So the parnasa is described as every morning in the sense, the same way, for example, as the mun fell every morning. But then every moment it's decided for the person whether that parnasa is going to be for his good or chas v'shalom for the opposite. So Rabbi Yosef holds that this takes place every day, whereas we were saying before that it takes place on Rosh Hashanah. The Bavli also mentions these different opinions. And there's various explanations, in particular in Kundra Samaya, in the Rebbe Rashab, has a long discussion of it based on earlier sources in Chassidus and based on earlier Mephoshim, that the difference is, for example, you can have a person is judged on Rosh Hashanah, but then you can have, for example, the Eibishter may have decided on Rosh Hashanah that he's going to get a certain amount of ruchniyistika outflow, a certain amount of ruchniyistika shefa. But now the question is that going to stay up in the Olam Asel Yoinim, or is it going to come down here to earth? And if it's going to come down to earth, in which form is it going to come? In Boni, or in Chaye, or in Mizoyne Revicha, or all three, etc. So in that sense, the person is judged in a general way on Rosh Hashanah, but then there's more there's the specifics of what it's going to come down, in what way it's going to be seen begashmius, if it's going to be seen begashmius at all, and that takes place every day and even every moment. There's also a story involving the Baal Shem Tov with it, where where one time he and his talmidim see a vasatrega, a water carrier, and the guy is full of complaints about how hard his job is and everything. And the next day, the Baal Shem Tov meets the same guy, and every single thing that he was complaining about yesterday, now instead he finds the good side in it. So the Baal Shem Tov explains to his talmidim, same idea. On Rosh Hashanah, it was decided that this year he's going to be continuing to make his parnasa as a water carrier, but whether he's going to get it, whether he's going to have that parnasa, whether it's going to be in a good spirit, and or whether he's going to be in a bad mood about it and be complaining about everything, that gets decided individually every day. The Gemara continues. Rav Yitzchak Rabba b'shem Rebbe, melech v'tzibu nigonin b'chol yoyim. Now, here we're talking about the individual, whether he gets judged on Rosh Hashanah or whether he gets judged every day, but a king and a tzibur get judged every day regardless. Matayma, where do we see that in the Pasuk? As the Pasuk says, Lasis Mishpat Avdo Mishpat Ama Yisrael, that Hashem should do the judgment of his servant, meaning which Shlomo is referring to himself, the king, and the judgment of his people, Yisrael, Dvar Yom B'Yomo, every single day's word on its day, meaning that though, so even if the Yochid is judged primarily only on Rosh Hashanah, the Melech and the Tzibur are judged every day. Which means, in other words, Eitz Yosef explains, and the Bavli mentions this as well. A Yochid, for example, if he was written up and sealed between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur for a particular thing, that he may not have such a good year, even if he does Tshuva afterwards during the year, that may not be altered, because already it's too late. It was already sealed on Yom Kippur. But a Tzibur is constantly going to be rejudged, and therefore instead Hashem can modify and moderate the Gzar Din if it was going to be not so good, and then they did Tshuva, then it can become better. The Bavli actually goes into a little more detail about it and mentions, for example, if it's a matter of rain, so Hashem won't tear up the original Gzar Din altogether. Instead, we learned about this when we learned the Bavli in Rosh Hashanah. Instead, Hashem will make sure the little amount of rain that was decided for that year, that every drop of it will go where it needs to be and nothing will be wasted. And vice versa, if they'd been tzaddikim on Rosh Hashanah and Hashem had decided they're going to have plentiful rain, and then during the year they become Rishoyim, the same thing in reverse. But the point is, in other words, but where that's not possible, in the case of rain, for example, it's possible to do that. In the case of other things, it may not be. So then Hashem will rejudge them on a daily basis and not just between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And the Melech was saying the same thing. The Gemara continues, Omer Ablevi, here's another thing that we can talk about when Hashem judges people. The Pasuk says, V'hu yishpot teva b'tzedek, Hashem judges the world with tzedek, with righteousness, yodin la'umim b'meisharim. He judges the la'umim, which means the nations, with fairness. So what does that mean? That Hashem judges different groups of people, different times of the day. HaKadosh Baruch Hu donis Yisrael b'yom. So Hashem judges the Jewish people by day, and why by day? That way it's in their favor. B'shar shein asukim b'mitzvahs, because by day is when people are doing mitzvahs. So now, when Hashem judges people during the day, then that way it comes out a more favorable judgment, because they're doing mitzvahs right then. That's Ovgechov and Balayla. Then Hashem also has Rachmonos on the Goyim. He judges them at night, the Shoshen Kutelim in Averis. At least by night, they're asleep. They're not doing Averis. So then, therefore, Hashem judges them then, because in other words, if he were to judge them by day when they're actively doing Averis, then they'd be complete goners. So let's just say Hashem has Rachmonos on them and defers the judgment to a time when at least the mitzvahs they're not doing, but at least by night they're asleep and they're not doing Averis. That's according to Rav Levi. On the other hand, Shmuel Amar, no, Shmuel said no, Mishul Donis Yisrael, who Donis HaOvikachavim. No, Hashem does both of them during the day. After Hashem judges the Jewish people, then he judges the Goyim. So all during the daytime. So how does Shmuel understand the second half of the pasuk that Hashem judges the nations fairly? So Rav Levi had said it means that Hashem is trying to look out and trying to be as fair as possible to the Goyim and therefore judge them at least when they're not actively doing Averis. But Shmuel, who disagrees with that, so how does he understand that half of the pasuk? The answer is he understands B'mei Shorim means by Yishorim Shabahem, means Hashem uses the upright ones among the Goyim as an example. For example, Hashem mentions to them what Yisrael did, where he was a priest of Avodah Zarah, in fact, every Avodah Zarah in the world, and then he became a ger, and similarly, Rochav Azoyna, who spent 40 years as a Zoyna, and then became a Geyurus. So in what sense does that mean that Hashem mentions them? So akosiv and so akosiv and in your and so akosiv says that basically what it means is therefore that Hashem uses them to be mezaka the goyim. In other words, Hashem will say, since you goyim produced such exemplary people as Yisrael and Rachav, therefore I'm going to have rachmanus on you because there can be other good people who can come from you as well. And besides which, like they can have like the. Because of them, then therefore their peoples can be judged favorably. On the other hand, the Korban Eda on the actual Yerushalmi says, on the contrary, Hashem uses them as a detriment to the Goyim. Hashem says, look at this. You have the example of Yisrael. You have the example of Rachel. Look what they made of themselves. Look how they turned themselves around. Why didn't you do differently? And therefore, like, they get used almost as like a kateger against the Goyim. Like, you could have been just as good as them, and you didn't, and therefore you deserve to be judged more harshly. So, according to Shmuel, that would be another meaning of Yodin L'Umim Meisharim. Okay. So now, we said that a person is judged between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So Rabbi Hananya, Chavrei and Rabbon and Boy, so Rabbi Hananya, the Chaver, the friend, the colleague of the Chachamim, asked, doesn't Hashem see the future? So, for example, what good does it do to write the judgment on Rosh Hashanah and then wait till Yom Kippur to seal it to see if the person is going to do tshuva? Or in general, when Hashem judges a person favorably and during the year he goes bad, for example, doesn't Hashem know the future and he knows what's going to happen? So why is Hashem judging him favorably now? Well, why does Hashem have to wait from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur? That's what Gemara is going to answer back. So they answered him back. Haven't you heard of what Rabbi Simon explained in the name of Rabbi Shimon Levi? Hashem judges a person only according to how he stands right now. Ma timer. Where do we even know Hashem knows what's going to be? But nevertheless, Hashem just takes into consideration what the person is right now. Ma timer. Where do we see that in the pasuk? We see that Hashem tells a malach tells Hagar about Ishmael, who's dying of thirst. He said to her, Al Tiri, don't be afraid. Hashem has heard the voice of the young boy as he is, meaning so in the simple meaning, it means where he is, lying under a bush over there. But it also means, Rashi mentions on the pasuk, Basher Husham, right now, relatively speaking, is a tzaddik. Yes, his descendants are going to be doing horrifying things to the Jewish people, but right now, relatively speaking, he's a tzaddik, and he doesn't deserve to die of thirst. He was misbehaving
and all.
Mephoshim deal with that point. But the point is, relative to what the Malachim are saying in the future, his descendants are going to cause the Jewish people to die of thirst, they're going to torture them, etc. But Hashem says, right now, relative to that, fine, he deserves to be punished, but not to such a degree to die of thirst. Relative to that, right now, he's epistatic. What about Ben Sora Ramoda? Mephoshim deal with that point as well. One point is, Ben Sora Ramoda is given over to the Beis Din here on earth. They don't go Basher Husham. The Ebishter tells them, you have to consider what's going to become with the Ben Sora Ramoda if he's left to continue in his path now. But the Ebishter himself doesn't have to judge that way. Anyway. There is, in fact, an explanation that's one reason. You know, when you think about it, the first day of Rosh Hashanah, we read Vashem Pocha Dasara, because the Gemara tells us that Hashem remembered, as we said before, Hashem remembered all of the Imahs that they should have children on Rosh Hashanah, including in particular Sara. But still, one point is also, why do we continue with the whole story of Yishmael being thrown out of the house and their whole wandering in the desert, etc.? One reason is, because on Rosh Hashanah, we need to hear this message, Vashem Husham, that a person needs to realize that Eibishter is judging me right now as I am right now and not taking into consideration what might become of me later in the year. So the Gemara continues. We have other drashas where we have other psukim that express the same idea that Hashem judges a person as he is right now, even though Hashem knows what he's going to be doing, even though Hashem knows what he's going to be doing in the future. So another pasuk, Amar Ablevi, Ksiv, you have a pasuk in Tilim that expresses this idea. The pasuk says, Lo yisyatzu hoylalim l'negenei necha. So literally it means the hoylalim, the ones who pride themselves on their rishus, are not going to stand before your eyes. And the pasuk continues, Sanesa kopayo le'oven. You hate all of those who do evil. So in the simple sense, we understand that the hoylalim themselves are the ones who do evil, and therefore Hashem doesn't want them around. But here, Ablevi explains that the two halves of the pasuk are telling us two different things. Lo yisyatzvu ha'olam negnei necha, the ones who are priding themselves and saying, I'm going to do this aveira, they're not standing before Hashem's eyes, as in that they're going to get punished, because loma shesamnesa kopayale yaben. Hashem only hates those who actually do bad, not the ones who are just thinking about it or talking about it. So therefore, that also expresses the point that as long as he hasn't done the aveira yet, then Hashem doesn't hold it against him. The Gemara elsewhere explains that Avodah Zarah is an exception to that. A person has thoughts of Avodah Zarah, then knows those do count like a Maisa. But other than that, Machshava Ra in HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mitzvah L'Maisa. Another Jorosha in that connection, Jorosha Yisachar Dekvar Mendi. Here's another pasuk from Iyov. Ki Hu Yoda Meseishav, Hashem knows the people of falseness. Mesei is a rare word that means people. Vayar oven, and he sees the evil that they do, v'lo yisboinan, but he doesn't consider it. Meaning, in other words, that Hashem knows how the people are going to be false, how people are going to be false, and they're going to be acting badly, and how in the future they're going to do oven, but v'lo, Hashem sees in advance that it's going to happen, v'lo yisboinan, but Hashem doesn't take it into consideration right now to punish him, because again, Hashem judges a person as he is right now, and right now he hasn't done that oven yet. Another pasuk, Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi. Here's another pasuk that expresses the same idea. Also in Eov, one of Eov's friends is telling him, "Im zach v'yosher ata, if you are pure and if you're pure and if you're upright." And then he continues the rest of the pasuk is ki after yor alacha, then Hashem would now arouse his rachmim on you, v'shilam nevas tzidkecha, and he'd pay back the deserved reward for your tzidkus. So now the point is, in zach v'yosha ha'yisa in tzidkan, the builder, the shulchi, who's saying this pasuk, isn't saying if you were pure and upright, ela in zach v'yosha after, if you're pure and upright now, then ki after yor alacha, then Hashem will arouse his rachmonis on you, v'shilam nevas tzidkecha, and pay back for your tzidkus, meaning, in other words, again, there's a few different explanations among the Mefoshim exactly how Rabbi Shulam Levi is doushing in the pasuk. One way of understanding it is that he's not talking about that if in the past you did tzidkus, then Hashem will pay you back for it. He's saying even if right now, maybe until now, you weren't such a tzaddik, and that's why your children died, etc., as you have it earlier in Sefer Iyov, but if now you become a tzaddik, then Hashem will pay you now for the tzidkus that you do now, even if Hashem knows that in the past you weren't so good, and even in the future you might not be so good as well either, but nevertheless, kiyata yor alacha. So that's one way of understanding the proof from the pasuk that Hashem judges a person according to how he is now. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, continuing on the topic of Simchas Beis HaSheva. So the Rebbe continued that our Maaser HaEikar is to increase in Simchas Beis HaSheva tonight with even greater with more energy than before. And this is similar, like we had when the Beis HaMikdash was standing. Everything of the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash we have nowadays in Ruchnius in a person's Avodah. And that brings about faster that it will actually have at the Poyo Mamash as well. So the same thing with Simchas Beis HaSheva. Through the Simcha of it, will have the schus to rejoice by the real Simchas Beis HaSheva, Mitzvah Sesenecha, on the Harabais in the Beis HaMikdash, and then from the dancing of our Simchas Beis HaSheva, we go to dance together with Mashiach Tzidkenu, and as we learned yesterday in the Yerushalmi, that Hashem will make a circle dance for the Tzedikim, and everybody is Marabetz Voi Voi Mazeh. A halacha. So children from above 5 or 6 years old, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says anything above 5 years old, the Alter Rebbe says more precisely, if it's a sharp 5 year old, then if he's sharp, then 5, otherwise 6, then his father has to be mechanechim to eat in the sukkah. Even if the father's not home, they shouldn't let him, whoever's taking care of him shouldn't allow him to eat outside the sukkah. The Alter Rebbe phrases it differently, that in general, we know the mitzvah of chinuch is primarily on the father, so the father would have to actually tell him off and tell him, you can't eat that outside the sukkah. The mother doesn't have quite that same chiyuv, so she's allowed to give him food, even if he'll eat it outside the sukkah, but she can't actually tell him, come, eat it here in the dining. She can tell, she give it to him inside the house, and if he doesn't go eat it in the sukkah, then she doesn't have to prevent him, but she can't actually tell him eat it inside, because that would be giving him an issur b'yadayim.
Say, lay shape of sukkah, and he's sukkahs out on the sidewalk here?
You say leshuv sukkah on the ones on the sidewalk. So in principle, you're not supposed to make a sukkah on the sidewalk because it's considered gozel sarabim. But where they have permission to, and I think I'm fairly certain they get some kind of permit for it or something. So then it's a regular sukkah. Then they have reshus to put it. So b'pashtus, then you would make a leshuv sukkah on them, same as any other.
Say
Karka ain't an exelus, but nevertheless, you're still not supposed to make a sukkah in the Karka is ain't an exelus. It still belongs to whoever it belonged to before, but you're still not supposed to build a sukkah over there without the reshus of the owner of the place. So in the case of reshus Arabim, then you get permission from the city or whatever.
Okay.